diagnosis.
Yes.
So how did that come about? What did you notice? Because, you know, obviously, as women, what should we be doing on a regular basis as
absolutely.
Women?
Absolutely. So I was a little bit unusual in that I didn't feel a breast lump.
Okay.
And I think this is an important point.
Yes.
Actually, it's anything that's different in your breast you should take seriously. Chances are it's not cancer, but you should never ignore it. And I noticed just a couple of days after a shower that I'd got a red mark on my breast. And I noticed it was always in the same place and it was the same shape. And I, you know, like most normal people, I went straight into denial. You know, oh, it's probably the hot water from the shower. It's just left a mark. But after a few days, it was consistently there. And I was just conscious that it wasn't changing. And something inside me was saying, this isn't right. I still kind of ignored it for a while. But then I went for a bra fitting, which is something I don't normally do. But I just thought, I'll give myself a treat, you know, go and have a proper bra fitting. And the girl who was fitting my bra said, oh, this is really strange. I can sort out your left side, but your right side, it's just not fitting properly. And this again was like a little alarm bell in my head. And I knew, it's just not right. You know, this woman's dealing with breasts all the days of her work, you know, and she thinks there's something wrong. So at that point, I went to the doctor. He examined me. He couldn't feel a lump either. And but he said, well, what we need to do is refer you to the breast department. He said, because it's a queer, you know, cancer is one of the possibilities, you should get an appointment fairly quickly, but don't panic about that. He said, it's just normal. I'm not expecting anything wrong. And so I got an appointment within 2 weeks. And I do think it's important to point out at this stage that you should get an appointment within 2 weeks if it's suspected cancer. And if you don't, you must go back and chase it.
Right.
I was lucky I did, but you know, some people don't. And so don't be frightened to go back to your doctor. If there's some question of it being cancer, don't be polite. You know, we all sort of don't want to annoy people, but you know,
yes, your health.
Absolutely, and you must go back. So anyway, I went along to this big breast unit, and I had a mammogram, so an x-ray of my breasts. And I was sitting there, and frankly, even though I was a doctor, and I think this is the important thing, the systems had all changed, you know, in adult medicine, and I just wasn't quite sure what was going on. So, okay, I knew what a mammogram was, but I was sitting there. I didn't know what the next stage was. In my day, you'd have seen the doctor first, whereas now they're going straight for the x-ray. So I was sitting there, and I heard a nurse talk to the young girl next to me, and she said, if there's anything abnormal on the mammogram, we'll do an ultrasound. And so I sat there, and then a nurse called my name. So I sort of grabbed all my bags and, you know, huddled after her, as you do.
Mm-hmm.
She took me into a room, and the first thing I saw in the room was an ultrasound machine. So immediately, it's kind of like my doctor head was thinking logically, ah, they've found something normal. But, you know, because I'm also a woman and a, you know, human being, I was just kind of almost screaming inside, my God, what's happening? This isn't right. I just came for a check. I haven't got a lump. What's happening here? And anyway, so then a doctor came in, a radiologist, and he said, well, we found something on the mammogram, so we're going to need to do an ultrasound examination. And he was lovely. He was a real sort of fatherly chap. So he laid me down. And, you know, I was just kind of making comments about the weather, as you do, trying to put on a brave face. And tears just started rolling down my face, and I just couldn't stop them. And I was kind of thinking, oh, God, this is embarrassing. You know, it was a bit dark in there, so I thought, hopefully they won't notice. And I was carrying on trying to talk normally. And then they took a sample. They numbed the skin so it didn't hurt. And they took a tiny little sample with almost like a big needle, really. And then they said, right, you go and see the surgeon now and have a talk with him. But we're going to send this off to the laboratory and we'll get the results in a couple of weeks. But the way the doctor was talking, and again, in a way, I'd got an advantage because, you know, I'm just familiar with medical things. I think for somebody who wasn't, it would have been very bewildering.
Is there a lot of jargon?
I think, well, it depends very much on the individual. Some people just seem to have a genetic inability to talk in normal speech. But other people are very good at communicating. And I think it is just a matter of luck. But again, I think that's an important point. If you do not understand, don't sit there politely smiling and going, yes, because we all do it. I mean, I do it myself. If you don't understand, just say, look, can you explain that a bit differently? Because people think they've explained it really well, and sometimes they just haven't. And also, you're in a state of shock. Things do not go in.
Yeah.
And I think it's
registering.
Absolutely. And I think it's just so important to have the confidence to talk. I mean, you're the customer. I think, and I'm digressing slightly, but the problem is that I think we're all, kind of a little bit nervous anyway in a hospital environment. We're conscious that the person we're talking to has power over our actual life.
Mm.
And whereas, they're all there to help you, your feeling is, I don't want to upset people. I don't want to be a nuisance.
I don't want to ask a stupid question.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yes. I mean, there are no stupid questions. End of.
Yeah, exactly.
But that's not how you feel at the time. And in fact, when I had my ultrasound, I was waiting outside to see the next doctor, and there was a lady there who'd just had one as well. And she was saying, they said I've got to see the doctor, but I thought he was a doctor. And, I realised then just even the simplest little things are confusing. But anyway, going back to my ultrasound, so I knew from the way he was talking that he thought it was cancer. It was, really very obvious to me.
As a doctor, I say, you kind of know.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. So then went in, saw the surgeon, who is the surgeon is the person who you usually see who deals with the breast, whether it's cancer or not. Even if it's not a cancer, you will go and see the surgeon because they're just the experts in all aspects of breast. So again, if you're told you're going to see a surgeon, don't think that you're going to have, a massive operation. It's just that they're the experts that you see. And he said, we need to wait for the results. So that's kind of where it went from there. But it was, I won't sort of take you through my whole story because we'll be here till next week, but a number of things went wrong, and it was strange because it was almost like there was somebody in the sky sort of writing my story.
Your book.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it was, kind of in books, things go wrong and there's jeopardy and worry and then, will it, won't it, and then things go right. And that was almost exactly how my story went. And I just suddenly got this strong feeling, almost the same strong feeling that I, decided I wanted to be a doctor as a child. And it was like, I have to write a book because I felt if I am struggling to understand what's going on and deal with things, how much harder is it for somebody who hasn't got any medical experience? What do you do if things go wrong? Things went wrong for me, for example, when I was having the radiotherapy, they give you treatment to the whole breast and then they give it to the area where the tumour was. And they wanted to give it to the wrong area. And the doctor that I saw thought my tumour had been somewhere different from where it was.
Oh, wow. How did they get that wrong?
Well,
did they have your x-rays?
Yes, they did.
Wow.
I mean, it wasn't kind of miles away from where it was, but it was the wrong area. And he kept insisting that it had been there. And so I went away, I got all the letters, I brought it back in. I thought, it's simple enough, I'll just show them this is where it was. And they just wouldn't believe me. It was the most bizarre situation. And this is where I do feel it was like, somebody up there was trying to make a story out of this because you just wouldn't have believed it. So I was left in a situation where I was having to argue my case with both the doctor I originally spoke to and his consultant. And they were both telling me I was wrong. And that is the most horrendous experience because, you're feeling at a disadvantage anyway. They're the experts, And as I say, I at least had a medical background, so I was confident that I was right.
Mm.
But even I was struggling, and to the point that I actually went away and thought, well, I'm just going to have to let them treat the wrong area. I can't think what else to do. I've seen the consultant. Everybody says that it was there. And I just think if I hadn't even had any medical background, I probably would have been convinced that they were right and I was wrong.
Yeah.
And even though, I actually had the lump, so I did know where it was. And anyway, at the final hour, it sorted itself out. And this is one of the things, what do you do if things go wrong? Who do you speak to if you think you spoke to the top person? And what actually turned it around for me was I ended up emailing my concerns. Now, I think when you put something in writing, number one, people can actually read it and understand it better than just in face-to-face. And also, I mean, there is a slight element that in today's sort of litigious society, I think people get a little bit nervous if things are written down. And so I would recommend if anyone was in that same situation as me, that is something you can do. And because they saw it in writing, they did take it seriously, and they ended up changing the radiotherapy to where I wanted it to be. And these are all things that I've put in the book because, you know, it's giving people the tools to deal with the system almost. You know, I mean, it's bad enough dealing with having cancer. And, of course, 99 times out of 100, you know, the people are lovely. They will help you and support you. And I met some lovely people.
Yeah,
and you won't have any of these problems. But if you do, how do you deal with it? And I just felt there was a huge need to have something there to, you know, be an instructor's guide, really.
Because obviously doctors are very busy and doctors can get things wrong as well. So.
They're only human. I mean, doctors and nurses and everybody, they go into the caring profession because of that. They want to help people. But, you know, they are overloaded. Miscommunication can happen. And it's not that people want to give you the treatment to the wrong place. Why would they? But, you know, it is, as you say, just they're busy or there's a miscommunication and a misunderstanding. And it's how do you get it across?
So you would say that when you are diagnosed, it's very important to make sure that you understand everything.
Yes.
All the information that you've been given.
Yes.
So if you don't, where would you say that they could start?
Looking for information.
Yeah.
That's a very good question because, I mean, obviously nowadays we've got Mr. Google and we can all go to Google. Now, the problem with the internet is that anybody can put anything on the internet.
Yeah.
So there's some excellent information on the internet, but there's also a load of complete claptrap and some stuff that's quite dangerous, particularly about cancer. You know, people come up with these crazy ideas and people believe it, and particularly if they're desperate. I mean, if you've got a cancer and you've been told there's no hope, you will look for anything, and you want to believe anything, even if it's not based on any, you know, sort of firm evidence. And actually, for that reason, in the book, I've got a couple of chapters explaining research and how you can get an idea of whether something is useful or not. I've also included further information sections guiding you to where to go where you will get good information.
Right, that's the
opposite. Yeah, so I mean, things like if you go to the websites of various societies, sort of medical societies, like for breast cancer, there will be a breast cancer group. A lot of the charities, they're another good source because, you know, the charity information will be of a certain standard. It will be information which is based on evidence, not just somebody's dreamt up idea. And I mean, if you just want to go to my website, which is phytobooks.co.uk, F-A-I-T-O books, I actually put links on there of where you can go. It's the same links that are in the book, just to give you a starting point. Things like Cancer Research UK, you know.
Yeah, that's where I recommend. So those are the ideal places to start. And one of the things I want to say, we're going to go to a break and then we'll be back shortly. But before I do say that, you know, I will resonate what you said about the charities.
Yes.
You know, very important. And Macmillan are amazing.
Yes, they are.
I know a lot of families who have spoken about the Macmillan nurses and the support they've got from them. So Macmillan is an organisation. It's absolutely amazing. And if you would like to call them, the number is 0808 808 0000. So that's 0808 808 0000, and their line is open Monday to Friday, 9 a.m. to 8 p.m. What I found amazing when I went and checked them out and looked on the website was they listed what they help with. So these are the points that they put. So the first one, I've just been diagnosed with cancer. I'm having treatment. I've finished treatment. Cancer and pregnancy. Someone I know has cancer. I'm looking after someone with cancer. Teens and young adults. Cancer and other conditions. And rare cancers. So they help you with a range of different things. And one of the things that I wanted to speak to you about, and we'll do that after the break, is I'm looking after someone with cancer.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Because, you know, it not only affects the person who's diagnosed, but as you said earlier when we were talking, it affects the families.
Absolutely.
As well.
Yeah.
Obviously, when it's children, it's more in a wider extended.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, we're going to talk about that after the break. We're going to go to a break. And when we come back, we will interview Dr. Kathleen some more. I keep saying doctor. I'm like, Dr. Kathleen. Yeah, we'll come back and we'll speak to Dr. Kathleen. I'm going to play you guys another video. And I absolutely love this. I was telling Dr. Kathleen, you know, cancer happens to people. And it's amazing what some people take from the experience. In terms of seeing a loved one go through cancer. So here's a poem from Chris Braggs, and it's called Cancer. So I hope you guys enjoy it, because I thought it was fabulous, and here you go.
If time could talk, I think it would stutter at the echo of your name, mimic your sounds of laughter, forget itself to remind you that you are something like eternity. See, I've been taking sips of your life for years now, regurgitating hourglass shots. I remembered you, crying, canteen bottles full of sorry because of something that you had no control over, while destruction laid at our doorstep like the gunpowder of an 1867 Western gunfight. You remembered, in the midst of a battle, guns drawn, sparks colliding, death spilling off the tip of your tongue. You cannot forget what you are fighting for. So knees bent like a compilation of broken origami hearts, eyes swollen with too much hope to hold behind eyelids, scriptures rolling down the sides of your face, you prayed. I remembered you at the edges of my Bible's page. There, I learned that cancer has no faith. No God, no justice, finds home in the cage of a breast, ticking time back decades. I can't count how many times I thought my kisses were bruised or fragile. How many nights I stayed up wondering how halos of hair climbed back into the hands of God. How something could want to take my mother away from everything. So fight. She was a soldier, her arms bruised but always open, her voice softer than the whisper of God during an avalanche of broken promises. But not once did she ever forget to tell me that she loved me, strapping on her armor. Not once did she ever forget to fight. Cancer, her body's biggest addiction, a wrecking ball full of drag, just a genocide, a landmine ready for extinction, a broken militia. I watched my mom fight for her life, for her family, with little weaponry, just a 35% chance to prove that her life was worth saving, to prove how much fight she had left inside. But sometimes it gets hard trying to stand up tall enough to have faith in something when all the odds are against you and your doctors are secretly telling your family to start planning out your funeral. I bet you could see it in my shallow eyes that my arms were afraid that you might break if I hugged you too hard, because there is something about watching your own mother have needles pluck her veins like guitar strings, the silent melody in her cries that could have scarred the ballad of my life. See, as a child, I was raised to believe that a mother's touch could protect me from anything, but I was never taught what to do when her fingers begin to crumble at my flesh, when time and love start to rattle her bones like maracas in a fire dance with fate. I had forgotten the love and your touch to begin with. So like a soldier, a survivor, she folds herself into a pink ribbon every night and hangs above my heart to remind me that my heart should always have reasons to beat, because she taught me how to love and she taught me how to fight.
Wow, that was Chris Braggs speaking about cancer. I love that poem. You know, I was saying, you know, you are tuned into the Something for the Weekend show on Urban Jazz Radio Live. We have Dr. Kathleen Thompson in the studio with us today. If you would like to call in the studio, the number is 0203-432-1333. That's 0203-432-1333. Thank you so much for being here, Dr. Kathleen. One of the things that, you know, I wanted to talk about next was family and how it affects those who are closest to you, as we just heard from this young woman. Does the book help families? Would it be important for maybe a partner, parents or extended family to have a read of this book, anybody who's caring for somebody?
Yeah, and this is another aspect I wanted to cover in the book, Tracy. First of all, what does it feel like to have cancer? Because I think what the first thing, I mean, there's various stages that families go through, and I mean, that poem was just incredible, and that just really shows, you know, it's not just dealing with somebody's illness, but the loss afterwards, which is just awful. But one of the things I wanted to do, first of all, was let people know what it felt like when you had a diagnosis, because it's a completely different feeling from anything else. I mean, as you say, everybody's first gut feeling when they've got a diagnosis of cancer is, I'm going to die and soon. Mm-hmm. And that was my feeling. And again, as a doctor, I should have known better. I mean, I know that most people do survive cancer.
Yeah.
But it is just so ingrained in you, deep in your psyche. And I went through the whole bereavement process, and reached the point of acceptance that I accepted that I was going to die. And I mean, thank God I haven't done. But also because I didn't have the information at the beginning, until I'd got the biopsy results, which took several weeks, I just didn't know. So you have all that time that you're going through that process. So in the book, I do describe that feeling, really to help people close to the person, be them partners, relatives or friends, you know, what they're feeling. And also what I talk about is how to deal with it. Because what I found very hard, and partly because I think it's important for the people close to the person to remember that the person is going through a bereavement process, which is, first of all, denial. You know, you go through these various stages: denial, anger, and then eventually depression, and then get through to acceptance when you're kind of dealing with it. Mm. And not everybody goes through it in order, and they don't all go through all the processes, but anger is quite an important one, and I felt quite angry with people. I mean, things like you'd look at old people in the street and you think, what have they done so great in life that they've lived to an old age when I might not be going to?
Yeah.
And there's all these thoughts that go through your head, and you might get angry with your partner or your family, because in a way it's often the people that you're closest to and that you love most that you can get rid of your emotions to. So you might just snap at them because they say the wrong thing. And so I think it's very important for people looking after people with cancer or who've got somebody close to them with cancer to understand that often it's almost not personal. You know, the person might get angry with them because of their state. Mm-hmm. The other important thing to recognise is that the people themselves, the partners, the children, the relatives of this person are going through their own bereavement process. So they might be feeling angry. Why are you leaving us? You know, which, yes, logically we know that it's not their fault they've got cancer, but you know, these are all normal feelings, and again, it's important for you to understand this. So if you're feeling resentment to somebody because they've got cancer, you're not just a horrible person. You know, you're going through these normal human processes and trying to deal with it.
Isn't it true that sometimes people avoid, because I had a friend who said people actually avoided her?
Yes.
Because they didn't know what to say.
Yes, I think that's
so
very
that
true.
Can be quite hard for someone as well who's going through
absolutely
that.
I mean, they say, you know, when you have a baby, everybody comes to see you. When you have a death or, you know, a serious illness, nobody does. And you're right, I think it is, again, genuinely people just don't know how to deal with it. And what I would say is always talk about it, or at least be prepared to talk about it. I mean, sometimes when you've got cancer, you actually don't want to talk about it. And so I think the person's got to be sensitive to know when to talk and when not. But you can be assured that by not talking about it, you're not being tactful, because the person is definitely thinking about it. You know, it's not like, you know,
yeah.
Oh, let's change the subject and they'll forget about it. You know, actually the person is thinking all the time. It's
That's
this one
thought.
I was
going to say to you, as someone who's gone through that journey, you know, what's 24 hours a day like? Is it that constant thoughts throughout the day?
At the beginning, it is. And then it's a strange, but I do believe that human beings are capable of dealing with pretty much anything. And you do get to the point where you do actually accept it. Okay, I may not live as long as everybody else, but everybody's going to die one day, and I accept it. And once you actually go through that acceptance, it becomes easier to deal with it. But it's a strange thing. At the beginning, it's just awful. You know, it's like a nightmare, and you kind of, you forget about it for a minute, and then suddenly it just comes back again. Oh God, you know, this really is here, and you know, it's not going to go away.
Was there anything additional to the actual care that you was receiving that you did in terms of therapy and your own journey?
I've always been interested in alternative therapies. I've got a Reiki 2 qualification myself. So I did go to a friend for Reiki healing. I did a lot of meditation as well. I always like meditation anyway. And I did find that helped. At one point when things were going seriously wrong with the treatment, my operation was nearly cancelled on the day, within hours. And there was nothing else I could do to sort of fight it. I just had to wait, and I actually did do a meditation where I felt as if all the energies were going wrong and were kind of buffeting around me, a bit like this hurricane that's going on in, you know, in the Caribbean at the moment. And I just did a meditation where I imagined all the energies going in the same direction and working together, and after that, funnily enough, everything started to go right. So I mean, it depends very much on your beliefs, but I do believe there is a lot we can do with our mind to help our situation. Mm. So I did that. What else? I think those were the main things for me, Reiki and meditation. But I mean, obviously there are many other alternatives. I've got a friend who gives acupuncture, so I did have acupuncture, but not... I think the important thing with alternative medicines is use them, why not? But it's not a matter of using them instead of conventional health medicine. I think there is a genuine place for conventional medicine. I'm old enough that I've seen cancer treatment change over the years. Mm-hmm. And I've seen people nowadays that have been cured who would have definitely died in the past. So I don't think we should turn our back on conventional medicine at all. And there's always a danger that people think, well, you know, I'll just sort myself out. Yes, there are things definitely you can do, and things with your health and diet that you can do a lot to help yourself, give yourself the best chance. But why not use everything that's available?
Yeah, and use them to complement each other.
Exactly.
Right? So you should follow what the conventional medicine's saying, and then use the alternatives to complement.
Absolutely.
That. Because there are some things that you can't do. So
yes.
Is it important to be well informed, like you said? Because
yes.
There's some holistic things that you can't do, right, while you're having conventional treatment.
Yes, probably not that many holistic things that you can't do in truth, but yes, it's always sensible to be informed. And obviously, if you go and see a holistic practitioner, always tell them, you know, what the diagnosis is, so you know they should make sure that, you know, what they do is safe for you. Yeah.
Okay, we're going to go back a little bit, because what I didn't do was talk about, I mean, you said that you didn't identify a lump, but one of the things that I'm pretty bad at is checking my breasts.
Yes.
How important is that for women?
I mean, first of all, aren't we all? and I'm still not much better even now, which I'm ashamed to say. But it is important, because the important thing is it's a change. You might not feel a sort of lump, and it certainly won't have a sign sticking out that say, you know, you better go and see the doctor now. You know, so it can be subtle changes. The important thing with cancer is to get it picked up as early as possible. So any subtle changes, it's worth going to the doctor. And you can only recognise a subtle change if you know what's normal for you.
Yeah.
And the thing is, if you do know your body, you quite often know before anybody else that something is not quite right. I'm not talking just about cancer, but any health condition. And I think, again, have that faith in yourself. If you think something is just not right, go to the doctor. And don't be put off, you know. It might be something too early for the doctor to see, but if you're persistent, look, I know it's not right. Can you do some tests or something?
Yes.
You know, it's important, because it can make all the difference to your outcome if you, you know, if you pick it up early.
When do they actually start requesting for women to test?
They keep changing the rules, and I'm ashamed to say I'm not 100% sure. I seem to think, is it over 50? To be honest, I'm not even sure.
Right.
So, but I think it's over 50 that start having mammograms. But even before that, you really need to examine yourself, particularly if you've got a family history as well. You know, because the thing is, young women do get breast cancer.
Right, yes.
So, you know, and there have been various stories of women very young, like in their early 20s, who have got it. And sadly, on occasions, they've gone to the doctor and they said, go away, you're too young.
Yes, I've got a recording of a lady that happened to. Yes.
Right. And it is just so important that you do not go away and you don't be put off. And again, it's hard when somebody in authority from a medical point of view says, no, you haven't got it. It's really hard to turn around and say, but, you know...
Can we check?
Yes.
Can we do the test?
Exactly.
You know, the NHS is under a lot of pressure. Mm. Do you think that might be one of the reasons that some doctors are put off putting people forward to actually have the test done?
Do you know what? I actually don't think so, because the NHS is under a lot of pressure, and I've seen it change a lot since I started out. Some things have got worse, some things have actually got better, and actually there are very good systems in place for breast cancer.
Right.
NICE, which is the National Institute of Clinical Excellence, which are the body that assess drugs and decide whether they're going to fund it or not, they actually produce a lot of guidelines to standardise care throughout the NHS. And there are NICE guidelines on breast cancer. And if anyone's got breast cancer, going back to what you were saying earlier, that's actually a very good place to look to inform yourself, actually.
What does it say again?
It's NICE, N-I-C-E, mm-hmm. guidelines. And if you go to the NICE website and look at breast cancer, there are guidelines there for different sorts of breast cancers. And it tells you all about the treatment, the investigations and everything. So it's very, very useful place to go to just inform yourself. And the NICE guidelines for breast cancer are anybody that presents with query cancer, i.e. a breast lump or anything else, should be seen by the hospital within 2 weeks.
Right, yeah, you mentioned
doesn't
that,
always
yeah.
happen, but that, you know, that is there. So there are systems in place. So I don't think it is just that there's pressure and, you know, doctors feel, well, I mustn't refer them because everybody's really busy. I think sometimes it is just individuals, or maybe you haven't explained yourself properly. I mean, I'm terrible at explaining myself.
Yes.
And you think you've made it clear to the doctor, but they haven't understood or whatever. So don't be frightened to say it, and say it again, really.
Yeah, I'm glad that you reiterated that and said that twice. So people, you know, because there might be people who are going through it at the moment, so mm. you may have been found a lump, you may have been diagnosed, you may be in treatment, you may have finished treatment, you know, whatever stage you are at, or you may know somebody who's going through that process at the moment and you might want to do your best to be there for them. Mm-hmm. So I'm really, really glad that you're here today sharing with us. You know, when I decided to do this show, I did think, oh, is it going to be quite scary for people?
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's something that we need to have more and more conversations about.
Definitely.
So that people start to become used
yeah.
to it and not afraid to talk about cancer.
I think the other important point on that, Tracy, is that, I mean, when I started off as a young doctor, nobody talked about having cancer, and it was almost like a self-fulfilling prophecy, because the only time you heard of cancer was when somebody had died of it.
Mm.
And I remember, and this is laughable nowadays, but as doctors, we would never tell a patient in front of them that they'd got cancer, so we'd use other words like carcinoma. And then when the general public started to know that carcinoma meant cancer, we'd change again and we'd call it an oncological lesion or something.
Right.
And there was a whole culture that you never told somebody that got cancer. You'd tell the relatives, but you wouldn't tell the patient. Nowadays, it sounds crazy. And nobody would talk about it. It was whispered. And so everybody's perception was, if you had cancer, you were going to die and die quickly. I think one good thing now is people do talk about it more. And so people are more aware of people that have had cancer and got through it and been cured. So in a way, it's, you know, it's helping people dispel some of the fears. I mean, yes, it is a serious thing,
mm-hmm.
and people do die, but you don't have to die from it. But it's